Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:53 Pacific Standard Time. Well, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. And I guess this is the last day of November, so let's have a review of what's been happening in the last month. Well, stock markets have had this powerful rally that began in the middle of October from a short-term oversold condition. Well, that's been replaced by a short-term overbought condition, and the potential for at least a consolidation has increased, at least in the short term. Well, the dollar has been rallying pretty much all month. Well, that's been particularly the case against the euro and the yen, but also against a number of these emerging market and commodity-related currencies. Well, that trend is picking up pace following the OPEC meeting yesterday. Led by Saudi Arabia, OPEC decided that they were not going to cut their production. They might try and enforce their limits, but they haven't got a very good record of being able to enforce their limits. And the U.S. is producing about 9 million barrels a day, which has taken it back to 1980 levels. But of course, that oil isn't exactly the cheapest oil on the market. Well, what we've seen is that the amount of oil that has reached market has increased substantially, but that it is, it's coming from the shale oil regions. And generally speaking, because of the cost of drilling those wells and the constant need for drilling and the technological complexity of drilling those wells, they're more expensive. Well, we're going to find out exactly how expensive and exactly where those break-even rates are for these shale oil wells, probably in the next few months. Well, this represents a potential opportunity, but also a challenge. When you think about where oil is and the kinds of sectors that depend on a high oil price relative to those that depend on a weak oil price. Well, we'll come back to that in a moment. Well, this month was also pretty spectacular in terms of what's been happening in China, that the Chinese market has rallied quite substantially. In fact, this week, the banking sector has rallied more than at any time in the last 4 years. That this is really quite a substantial upward dynamic, that the A600 banks index is breaking up out of what is essentially a four-year base. Well, this is really very important, considering just how bearish sentiment has been, and, well, that the action that we're seeing right now is a confirmation of a new bull market environment. Well, that's being aided, at least at the moment, by perceptions that monetary policy in China is easing. Well, Shinzo Abe has called an election, a snap election, and that's going to be on December 14th, so only 2 weeks from now. Well, he anticipates increasing his majority and getting a mandate for additional monetary easing. Well, I don't think there's any reason, at the present time at least, to doubt his conviction. And the yen was weak by an additional yen in here today, and it's weakened to 118.70. Well, considering that, this has been a remarkable deterioration. What you're starting to see now is that the second section index of small caps, which we have long considered a lead indicator for Japan, broke out to the upside this week. And with the weak yen, we can anticipate that the Nikkei's performance today was up about 1.25%, and that it will improve upon that performance when you have the weak yen and weak oil prices. Well, Japan, as an energy importer, and still laboring under the fact that it has had to close so many of its nuclear power stations, has been importing a great deal of energy, and lower energy prices are really a substantial boon for the economy. Well, when we look wider, that India is also a country that imports a great deal of its energy and also subsidizes it. So, it's one of those countries that is going to just do fantastically well from lower energy prices. Well, when we take a look at the bond markets, there was a panicky buying of bonds in early October, and the yield had come back up over the last 6 weeks. But, well, with energy prices coming down, that removes some of the inflationary bias that you see in, particularly in the commodity complex. And, well, then people start to go, well, you're going to get some pretty panicky commentary about deflation, but, well, realistically, this isn't deflation, this is disinflation. That we have lived in a high commodity price environment for the last decade, and, well, it is morphing into a lower commodity price in real terms. Well, that's removing some of the inflationary pressures that we've had in terms of, well, just about anything that uses energy, which it, outside of the just basic services is almost everything. Well, this is a really very big deal. Well, let's think then about exactly what we're getting here in the oil sector. Then, well, between the last 2 days and, of course, well, the commodity markets in the US were closed yesterday for the Thanksgiving Day holiday. Well, WTI is down $7.54 over the last 2 days. It's down to $66. In other words, it has fallen more than 10% in the last 48 hours. Well, this is an extension of what had been, well, this is an acceleration of the downtrend. But it's been a pretty consistent downtrend since the middle of July. In fact, well, we haven't really seen a rally of more than about $4. Well, if you just look at the pure consistency of the trend, that you're going to need to see a rally of more than $4 and, well, realistically more than $5 before people are going to look at a rally and say, well, this is a potential bottom. Or that if you were looking at it in terms of where a stop would be, that if you're running a short position, you'd be looking at where the rallies have been in the last few months and say, well, it hasn't rallied by more than $4. I'll have a stop of greater than $4. Well, if you've been to the chart seminar, that's the kind of stop that you would have in the market at the present time. And probably a lot of leveraged traders, that's also where they have their stops. So, well, this is a declining price environment. It's accelerating lower, and we don't have any evidence yet that this acceleration has ended. Well, what we know for a fact is that there's been a great deal of expenditure in terms of increasing the supply of oil and also in transporting it. Well, the energy complex has been highly representative of the total capital expenditure in the U.S. economy over the last 4 or 5 years. Well, with oil prices coming down this quickly, then they're going to be cancelling a lot of that capital expenditure. Well, it's not just the oil companies. Well, when you think about all the money that has to be spent to develop a pipeline, well, the economics of that pipeline become less compelling if you start to see that energy prices are coming down. And the capital expenditure to increase supply even further starts to dry up. Well, what about all those rail companies that have been transporting the oil all over the country? Well, if energy prices come down and that has an impact, and it will necessarily have an impact at some stage on the amount of supply coming out, well, that's also going to have a meaningful effect on the performance of some of those rail shares. Well, we're not really seeing, these are medium-term considerations, but what you're seeing is that the major oil companies have encountered resistance in the region of their 200-day moving averages following pretty steep declines in October. Well, the lows in mid-October absolutely need to hold, or, well, this is going to be the resumption of what is now a medium-term downtrend, that this is a pretty important stage here. Well, of course, the drillers, well, they depend on the capital expenditure of some of those major oil companies. Well, the oil companies are just not going to be spending money on increasing supply for the foreseeable future. Well, those drilling companies have been pulling back and pulling back hard, and a number of them extended their declines in here today. Well, then you start to look at things that benefit. What about the airlines? Well, airlines had already been doing well. They're doing even better in here today. Well, fertilizer companies that depend, well, that they are big users of energy, not least natural gas, well, they're going to benefit from this. Well, aluminium production is going to become a bit more efficient with lower energy prices. But what about consumers? That consumers are going to be paying less for their gas at the pump. They're going to be paying less for heating, less for cooling. That well, farmers are going to have to pay less to for their cost of production. Well, that all contributes to more money in people's pockets. Well, you're obviously going to have some pressure in on the employment front from the energy complex, but that everyone else is going to benefit. Well, what we're seeing right now is that, well, energy companies tend to be quite large, that particularly in terms of their market cap. So, well, that's going to have an impact on at least some of the producers in here. Well, you can see then that the S&P 500 was down a little bit in here today. Well, the NASDAQ was up by 20, about 0.5%. But Canada was down 1%, Mexico was down 1%, but not only were their stock markets down 1%, but that their currencies were also lower. That commodity-related currencies, they had been among the best performers in the world. That you'd seen the Canadian dollar appreciate to higher than parity, you'd seen the Australian dollar appreciate to higher than parity, and in some cases substantially above parity relative to the US dollar. That the Brazilian real doubled between about 2003 and 2010. Well, that's over. That you can see from a number of these charts that these commodity-related currencies are coming under pretty extreme pressure. Well, Russia obviously has the additional consideration that it has had sanctions levied against it because of its adventurism in Eastern Europe. Well, and I think adventurism is about as kind a term you could put on it as possible. But the ruble is declining and declining rather quickly in here. Well, that's despite the fact that you've had a number of oil executives from Russia coming out and saying, well, that they can weather this storm very well. Well, at least to me, this looks pretty reminiscent of the kind of action that we were seeing in Europe when you had these prime ministers coming out and telling us in the teeth of the credit crisis that, well, their banks were fine, and then you had bankruptcies within 2 weeks. Well, you're going to have some serious problems in some of the energy companies where not only do they have debts to repay, but that they are suffering from higher taxes because their countries need them, but also because these lower energy prices are going to put a crimp on their ability to pay back their debt. Well, they need to increase supply in order to balance their books, and that's just not going to be feasible at this stage. Well, medium term, what we'll see is a rebalancing, that eventually the oil price will fall enough so that some of the supply will be taken out of the market and we'll get it coming back into balance. But that's just not the case at present. That's a medium term consideration, and we're just not there yet. Well, when you look at the continuous commodity index, it extended its decline in here today. Well, if you look at oil and then you look at copper, well, the CCI has pretty much split the difference between the two. That oil had broken down a number of weeks ago, that copper is breaking down in here today, and the CCI was somewhere in between. Well, copper was down by 10 cents in here today. Well, I think the March contract, which is the on-the-run contract, was down over 11 cents. Well, that's breaking down in a big way from what had been this $3 area, had been an area of support over the last nearly 2 years, and the progression of lower rally highs has been in evidence since about 2011. Well, this is extending the downtrend. Well, copper is important. Well, a lot of people look at it as a gauge of the economic health globally, but well, it's probably also worth considering that there was an enormous amount of money invested in increasing the supply of copper, and a lot of that supply is coming online. That what we're really seeing now is that it is just simply that supply is overcoming demand, that the demand growth estimates that were used to, well, to justify spending all that money are not panning out. Well, what we can also think of is that this just could not be happening at a better time for India. That not only is Narendra Modi a very smart individual, but that he really is lucky that he is coming into power in the aftermath of what has been a remarkably high price and point for a lot of the kinds of commodities that India is going to need if its growth and infrastructure ambitions are going to be achieved. Well, iron ore prices have come down a lot, copper prices are breaking down, and oil prices are coming down. Well, that this just could not be better for India. That not only is it benefiting from these weak energy prices, but that the broader commodity complex, particularly the industrial commodities, are coming down as well. Well, that's really just must be music to the ears of the Indian administration. It certainly isn't doing the stock market any harm. Well, the stock market has done fantastically well. It is overbought in the short term. Well, when we think about how India has done, you'd have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, but that it is a little bit overbought in the very short term, that we probably are going to get at some stage a better buying opportunity, but that nothing has happened yet to question the integrity of the advance so far. Well, Europe is also a major energy importer. That the lower energy prices, well, from the ECB's perspective, they're going to represent deflationary pressures, but of course it's disinflation. That the consumer in Europe hasn't got any relief from their governments in terms of lower taxes. They haven't got any real relief so far from the ECB. Well, the ECB has been talking about increasing the supply of money by 50% by taking the ECB's balance sheet from 2 to 3 trillion euros. But they've been pretty slow so far. That, we can see it coming down the pipeline, that certainly the government bond markets in Europe are pricing all of this in, but that it's still very much in its infancy. Well, lower energy prices are real, and they're going to be felt right across the boards. Well, if Europe starts to get, well, it gets the kind of cold winter that much of the US is experiencing right now, well, lower energy prices are going to be very, very welcome indeed. Well, that's all going to help in terms of economic revival over the medium term. Well, it's also quite positive. The euro is weak. The euro, it wasn't as weak today as the pound or some of the commodity currencies, but, well, it's hard to make a bullish case for the euro when the ECB is going to increase the supply of money. That, well, Europe needs a weak currency, that it's going to get weaker energy prices, and, well, generally speaking, that should all be pretty positive for the consumer. But from the perspective of a global investor, that, well, when you think about where you're going to get the potential for currency market, capital market, and yield, well, then you look at Europe, that you're going to potentially get capital market appreciation, but that you're not going to get currency market appreciation. Well, you look at Japan, that there is ample potential for capital market appreciation because they're devaluing the currency at such a rapid pace. Well, that suggests that currency market hedging is going to represent a much more important aspect of engaging in global markets in future than it has been. Well, when you then take a broader perspective, you look at the US, that the dollar has been so weak for so long that despite the fact that you have this short-term overbought condition, that we could be in the potential base formation completion phase of the dollar's rally, that it could rally substantially beyond where it has already rallied. Well, that's really a particularly meaningful move because the S&P 500 has completed this 13-year range in the last 18 months, and well, it continues to improve upon that performance. Well, in the US, you have capital market appreciation, you have currency market appreciation, and well, it's likely to be one of the first countries to raise interest rates, although there's no evidence yet that that's about to happen imminently. But, well, then you could also start to get that the dollar will have this interest rate differential beginning to move more in its favor if one were to take the 5 to 10 year view. Well, when you look at China and India, well, India has had the currency market devaluation already. That, well, they're going to be much more interested in trying to sustain the rupee. They don't want to see the rupee decline at the same pace that it has done in the last couple of years. Well, That doesn't mean that the rupee is going to rally meaningfully, but that it is likely to be a bit more steady than a number of the other currencies in the region. Well, China's currency has been very strong for quite a long time. It's unwound the entire devaluation from 1994. Well, it's unlikely to get very much stronger. But neither is it likely to get particularly weaker. Well, it would really be a measure of a serious problem in the banking sector and with non-performing loans if they were to devalue the currency. Well, you'd have to say that that is an outside risk, but it is a risk nonetheless. But with the stock market starting to improve now and coming off remarkably low levels with the lowest valuations in the world, that the potential for a currency devaluation, it has to be pushed out from here, and that, well, China and India represent two bull market cases that are very, very, very compelling indeed. Well, I don't think it's possible to exaggerate just how potent those markets are, and of course they've been among the best performers so far this year. Well, thinking about it next year, that, well, there's a number of markets have done spectacularly well, and that you would have to anticipate that we're going to get some form of consolidation at some stage. But that lower energy prices really are a very, very big deal. Well, the types of industries that do well from higher energy prices, well, one of the ones that is particularly poignant in here is the renewable energy complex. Well, if you look at some of those solar energy shares, for example, well, they've been pulling back for the last 3 months. Well, that's probably brings out some of the brings into focus some of the arguments both for and against solar. Well, if you think about it, on one hand, that a number of the solar companies today are producing solar panels that are representative of old tech, that they had benefited over the last few years because the incremental price of old tech solar panels had decreased. Therefore, demand had increased and the installation rate had improved. Well, what we're seeing on the other side is that the technological innovation is that Moore's Law has been applied to solar panels. In other words, that they are getting progressively cheaper, progressively more efficient. And, well, that means that the potential productivity gains that can be squeezed out of the solar panels is improving steadily, but that it's improving at such a remarkable rate that, well, if you install solar panels now, that they become obsolete in a very short period of time. Well, what you're seeing is that the with technology, that some of the most efficient solar panels that you can get right now in the lab are upwards of 50 and 60% efficient, whereas the ones that they're installing in your house are probably closer to 15 to 20%. Well, that represents a problem right now for a number of those types of companies, because with lower energy prices, well, the incentive for people to install, to invest, and to really spend the time, effort, and money to put these things up, well, it's not nearly as much of a priority now that energy prices are coming down than it would have been even in the summer when energy prices were north of oil prices were north of $100. Well, you have to think too, well, how many people were really interested in LEDs and CFL light bulbs in the early 2000s when oil prices were at $10? Well, how many people were interested in smaller cars or in electric cars or energy efficient cars when gasoline prices were $1 a barrel? Well, sorry, $1 a gallon. Well, that's what we've obviously, nobody was, well, everyone's known about the hole in the ozone layer for the last 30 years, but, well, it wasn't really until we had energy prices pushing higher that people became really interested in climate change. Well, those arguments all become less compelling in a lower energy price environment, that the people's social conscience is going to have to be appealed to rather than their pocketbooks when you have lower energy prices. Well, that represents a challenge for a number of those types of shares. Well, we've said for quite a long time now that shale oil and gas are game changers for the energy sector. Well, they're game changers for the wider economy. That, well, we're going to see some consolidation in that industry. That the higher cost, the higher price environment players are going to get squeezed out as prices come down. Well, that's not just the case in the US, but it's the case for higher energy cost producers just about everywhere else. Well, it represents a challenge for Brazil as well. Well, they've spent a great deal of money investing in the pre-salt, which are some of the deepest wells in the world. Well, that's not cheap, and that oil is just starting to come online now. They've already spent the money. Well, they can't stop pumping now. The prices are coming down. Well, Canada might have some of the lowest cost oil in the world, but they've spent a great deal of money in trying to develop that. And, well, the economics of borrowing all that money were based on pretty high prices. Well, we're going to see rationalization as a result, that a number of the Asian oil producers are pretty low margin. They've also pulled back in here. And I suppose on top of that, that there were a number of companies in places like Texas and Pennsylvania which paid really pretty rich prices to acquire their drilling rights, and they were relying on high prices being sustained in order to justify those prices. Well, it means that we're going to see consolidation in the industry, not least in the drilling sector, but that the stronger players will survive, and that when we start to see relative strength being exhibited, then that's when we're going to have pretty good evidence of the ones that will survive and the ones that are going to, likely to prosper. But again, people aren't going to be thinking about that at the present time because prices are coming down quite heavily in here. Well, when we think then about the long term, one of the conditions that we'd been looking for quite some time was that energy prices would be lower in real terms from the mid to the latter half of this decade. Well, we're starting to see it now, that energy prices are coming down. Well, energy costs represent a headwind for economic growth. And, prices are down $50 in the last 6 months, and that removes a pretty substantial headwind from the global economy. Well, that's going to contribute to productivity growth, and it's going to contribute to economic growth. Well, when we think then about the global population, governance is improving in the major population centers. Well, the Chinese administration are slowly but surely opening up their financial markets. They're attempting to support the consumer, and they're attempting to crack down on graft. That in India, Narendra Modi has got this substantial majority in parliament, that he has a mandate for change, and he's being helped along by lower commodity prices. And Indonesia has got a new prime minister, and he's attempting to tackle the subsidies, and particularly in the oil sector, and he's being aided by lower energy prices there as well. Well, you take it together, what you're looking at is that the major population centers of the world have improving governance. They're going to be helped along in many respects by the lower commodity prices, and that's going to enhance the productivity of their populations. And when you start to think about just those three countries alone, you're talking about almost half the global population. Then when you think about technological innovation, the Nasdaq continues to outperform. You'd have to say that under any definition, it's getting a little bit overbought in the short term. It's being led higher by Apple, and it's closing in on its all-time high. You'd have to think that there's going to be some form of consolidation when you get the Nasdaq 100 printing a new all-time high. People are going to be asking a simple question, has this been another bubbly kind of environment? the market is a bit overbought in the short term. And well, we know what happens when something becomes overextended relative to the trend mean, that mean reversion is virtually inevitable, and it is only then a question of when and how quickly that reversion is going to occur. But when you think about this over the long term, that the pace of technological innovation is picking up, that we've gone through the last 10 years, well, more like 15 years, where the technological innovation that we've had has been impressive, but it hasn't contributed to the kind of productivity gains that could really drive a bull market. Well, that's changing, that you're getting 3D printing. Well, you can go to Microsoft's website now and you can buy a MakerBot for about $1,000. You can buy the bigger one for $2,000. Well, it wasn't that long ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, that the same thing cost you $30,000. Well, these technology is getting cheaper, and then these incredibly useful tools for developers are becoming just way more accessible. Well, you can buy a drone with an embedded camera for approximately $100. Well, it wasn't that long ago, they were more like $1,000. Well, you're getting this innovation in the healthcare sector, that biotechnology and gene therapy is improving. We're really only starting to reach commercialization now, and well, that's following almost 20 years of development. Well, this is really important, that, well, you know, Apple's iWatch is going to come out in March, and you'll have 24/7 monitoring of your pulse, that it'll be able to take your blood pressure 24/7. Well, we're getting to this type of environment where these are the kinds of things that can massively improve the productive capacity of each individual worker. Well, GDP in many respects is productivity per capita. Well, on one hand you can have per capita, on the other hand you can have productivity, and well, what we're looking at is that you're going to have both, and in a lower energy price environment. Well, that's the kind of environment where you get secular bull markets developing, that you look at the Dow gold ratio, and it trended lower between 1999, 2000 and last year, and now we've had this big reversal. Well, every time in the last 100 years that you've had these kinds of big reversals, well, then it has morphed into these long bull markets that can last upwards of 20 years. Well, that doesn't mean you can't have lengthy consolidations within a secular bull market, but it does mean that major pullbacks will be buying opportunities for the foreseeable future. Well, I think with that, I'll leave you for the weekend, and I wish all the best to all of you.